is an absolute privilege and joy to speak to you this morning about a subject that I am incredibly passionate about, crying. And that isn't a joke. I'm really interested and I'm doing a lot of current research into this subject, so it feels really wonderful to be able to speak about it. But this talk has morphed and shifted with the week that has been, a week which for many has been really troubling and sad. And it is by God's grace and goodness that with holy foresight he ordained that this is a topic we should be speaking about today. And as we ponder together, my goal this morning is that we would leave this place more a friend of tears than when we came in. That we would remember that there is no shame in crying. A disclaimer for my thoughts, though. Well, two actually. One, please don't hear this as you need to cry, and if you're not a crying person, there's something wrong with you, because that is not this sermon. That's what you take away from this. That is not my intention. And the second is that tears are a crazy mystery. Tears are a crazy mystery. Many scientists, psychologists, and theologians have wrestled with our biological and spiritual propensity for tears, asking the question, why do we cry? It's this fascinating question that is the driving force behind my current dissertation. And I'm finding more and more questions the deeper that I go with this topic. So this sermon is going to be a wander around our passage and some thoughts and reflections on the theme of tears, challenging, I hope, any misconceptions that we've come in with today, and hopefully learning some things together, seeing how we can better value crying, giving it a well-deserved place in our spiritual tool belt, and hopefully by the end we'll have begun a journey. This is not the end of the matter, but hopefully we will have begun a journey that sees crying as motivation to pray, but also that tears can be prayer in and of themselves. So to get us warmed up, to get our thinking brains engaged, if you could just think for a moment about what feelings you encounter when you see somebody crying. When you see somebody weeping, and I don't know where your mind goes to with that, but when you see somebody crying, how does it make you feel? Really honestly. Perhaps you might feel embarrassed or awkward. Maybe you're an empath, and so you feel really acutely the feelings of that other person that you're witnessing. Perhaps you just get irritated. And in this scenario that you're thinking of, does the way that you feel change if the sex of the person changes? Or the age of the person that's crying in this scenario? If you see a child crying as opposed to an adult man, is your response different? Why might that be? What are some of the conceptions that you hold about crying and tears? Are they an inconvenience to be rushed past? Or are they something that you do see as valuable? Approaches to crying are very different based on culture and where we might live in the world. In our country, we are perhaps renowned for having a stiff upper lip, and we traditionally may not enjoy public displays of emotion or affection. We also have this embedded thing in our culture that says that crying is somehow a show of weakness, almost a flaw. Also, traditionally, crying has been thought of to be a more feminine act, exploiting women's over-emotional nature. Forced tears or fake tears can be weaponized and used to manipulate. And when we experience this insincere emotional display, we become desensitized and suspicious moving forward, becoming unbelieving of tears in the future. Over the years, many children have been told to put up and shut up, or to be seen and not heard, suppressing and burying emotion and tears. perhaps some of these different things, these different ways that we view tears are familiar with us in our culture. So it might be a surprise to many then that this is not the true story of the teachings of the Christianity that we profess. In our shared story of the life of the church, with a big C, the history of our common family, tears have been valued and revered and recognized as important and healthy, both as a bodily function and as a necessity for our spiritual lives. And in the Bible, we see so many examples of tears, with over 500 references to crying alone. Jesus, Peter, Joseph, Nehemiah, Ezra, Bartimaeus, Jonah, Jeremiah, Job, the Canaanite woman in Matthew 15, Mary Magdalene, Mary of Bethany, Hagar, Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah, Hannah, Esther, Ishmael, Esau, Moses, Jacob, and Paul are just some of the named people who cry in the Bible. And perhaps the most prolific weeper, our friend David here in this psalm. Psalm 6 that we've just heard is known as the first of seven of the penitential psalms, songs of confession and humility before God. It was a custom in the early church to sing these psalms on Ash Wednesday, 40 days before Resurrection Sunday. And Ash Wednesday is the day that many begin their fasting, and we remember in our services that we are but dust and ashes before God. It doesn't say it in our Bibles here, but in other NRSV translations, this psalm is headed as a prayer for recovery from a grave illness. So it is fitting that people would use it on Ash Wednesday as we remember our human fragility before God. We see David asking God to be gracious to him for God's deliverance as he languishes. We notice that the psalm is said to be for stringed instruments, which even in our culture can often be recognised as creating a mournful sound. I was thinking when I was reading it of Barber's Adagio for Strings, or even that unfortunate mocking phrase when somebody tells a sad story and we say, oh, hold on, let me get my violin. There is this connotation, isn't there, with stringed instruments. David is petitioning God in his grief, feeling that God has abandoned him or that God is taking too long to remember him. And this is expressed bodily in his description of his tears. To go back to verses 6 to 8, the chunk about crying, it says, I am weary with my moaning. Every night I flood my bed with tears. I drench my couch with my weeping. My eyes waste away because of grief. They grow weak because of all my foes. Depart from me, all you workers of evil, for the Lord has heard the sound of my weeping. I was reminded when I read this psalm in its entirety again of the Jewish tradition of sitting shiva. I don't know if you've heard that before, which one of the best biblical examples of that practice is in the book of Job, where Job's friends sit with Job in his mourning and his grief. Where we feel a need often to offer advice or to comfort someone out of their grief and their mourning, sitting shiva, sitting with someone, would see us go and sit and join that person in their grief instead of trying to pull them out of it, which I think is really beautiful and challenging to us, to allow someone to stay in that important part of their grief process and sacrifice something of our own to meet them there. And I kind of felt that this is almost what God does with us and does with David in this passage. We know that God is not absent. We know that because we know God. But perhaps he is sitting with David in his grief in this moment. Because at the end of the psalm, in the closing of it, after all of David's lament, he knows that his tears are seen by God. He knows that he has been heard. God doesn't intervene between the lament and David's recognition. God hasn't done anything yet. But almost in his external processing, David reaches his own conclusion of confident hope based on what he knows to be true of God. And he is comforted that God sees his weeping, and his weeping has helped him to reach this place of recognition. There is a physical process that happens when we cry that helps our processing of feelings. Biologically speaking, crying releases hormones that help us to feel good, endorphins. When we are laughing with happy tears, there's that euphoric sense, isn't there? It helps us relieve pain by releasing oxytocin. So when we cry, our pain is lessened. And it reduces our stress by reducing our cortisol levels when we cry. God made crying for a reason. And as well as the biological, there is a spiritual necessity. They can be, as we've seen with David, the locus, the meeting place for communion with God. They are often a physical sign of something going on much deeper inside of us, an inward work of the Spirit. In the Anglican Church, the sacraments, which include communion that we're going to have, are often understood by the definition, an outward and visible sign of an inward and invisible grace. The act is the sign and symbol of God doing something inside of us at that time. I'm pushing in my current work to argue for a more sacramental understanding of tears, that they can often be an outward sign of something God is doing or shifting inside of us. In our heartbreak and discomfort and our pain, sometimes they are a bodily function that says there is healing going on, that there's a process taking place, or it's a stirring of God's own compassion for the other inside of us, his love. In joy when we weep, they're almost a physical manifestation or a physical presence of the fruit of the Spirit. Joy is a fruit of the Spirit. So when we cry with laughter and ultimate joy, it's a physical sign of something that God is doing inside of us. So, yes, I think tears can be taken much more seriously, and I hope that you will too by the end of this. That rather than just being suppressed out of fear of cultural misunderstandings or embarrassment, we can actually see them and recognise them as God intended them to be. I'm now known as the crying girl at college. Thankfully, not because I'm always crying, although there is some truth in that as well. But the amount of times that people are aware of the research I'm doing and they come to me, let me tell you this amazing testimony I have about crying and how God worked through that in my life. Or something that happened to me in this meeting with God where I was weak. And it's so interesting that that invitation is there. And suddenly all these stories are uncovered that people would not normally share. So the language of tears is mysterious. It is its own language. As someone who finds themselves welling to tears fairly frequently, the question I've learnt to ask is, why am I crying? What is it that's... You know that feeling you sometimes get where it catches or something happens or you can feel yourself? That question, what is it that's causing this reaction? What is stirring in me, God? And then to address God in relation to those emotions that are driving the tears. That might mean recognizing there are some things I'm worried or sad about or I'm hurting. But it could also look like tears of joy that warrants some kind of gratitude to God. For friends, for fun, for laughter. Endorphins are God-given too. Both of those extremes lead to prayer, weeping out of pain and weeping out of joy can both lead to a conversation with God for different reasons. It's the stimulus for that, isn't it? But sometimes the tears are enough. And I think that's the thing that I really want to say today, that when we think of the word weeping, it's sometimes used to describe the act of a wound. Wounds often weep as an act of self-healing. So perhaps the next time we feel tears rising to the surface, we will not neglect to consciously treasure them, to welcome them even, as sure signs of something that is happening within us. We are driven by compassion, perhaps, or something is being drawn out of us, or something is highlighted that we can bring to God in prayer, or we are sitting in a place of deep humility, or we are savoring the joy of a sweet moment, or we are astounded by the presence of God. We can do nothing else in those moments but let our hearts express in our bodies what words cannot speak. Tears communicate the ineffable, the unspeakable. In verse 3, there is a really good example of David almost losing his faculty for speech in his distress. It says, "My soul also is struck with terror, while you, O Lord, how long?" He begins this sentence, this accusation towards God, which he doesn't finish. Instead, it turns into a cry-like question, almost like he's interrupted by his pain. If you have ever been told to stop crying, let me apologize. And please, can we allow others and ourselves to cry when we need to? Particularly at times like these, when there is so much going on that warrants tears. It might feel countercultural or uncomfortable, but let me assure you that that is not the case, or not intended to be the case. Tears are an often lost, timeless, human response to all sorts of things. I would encourage you to let go of any shame that you have subconsciously attached to the act. God sees your tears, as he saw David's, and he meets you in them. They are transformative in and of themselves when we hold them rightly before God and recognize him in them. He meets you in both your mourning and your joy. They are a locus for communion with God. We join in with a human act that he is well acquainted with. Jesus, God himself, in fully human form, weeps over the death of his friend Lazarus. He weeps over Jerusalem. And he weeps over the difficult task set before him. There is no shame in tears. And God sees every single one. And I will leave you with the words of Charles Spurgeon, which beautifully summarise this psalmic theme. Is it not sweet to believe that our tears are understood even when words fail? Let us learn to think of tears as liquid prayers. I'll say that again. Is it not sweet to believe that our tears are understood even when words fail? Let us learn to think of tears as liquid prayers. Amen.